honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special Martin Luther King Jr. Day edition, highlighting the trail blazed by African-American servicemen and women during World War II that laid the groundwork for the breakthroughs to come. For many who grew up north of the Mason-Dixon line, they didn't realize the depth of the discrimination that existed until they ended up in uniform. That was the case for Robert Hammond, who would go on to become a corpsman with the Muntford Point Marines, but grew up across the river from Philadelphia in New Jersey.
My oldest brother, he went to West Point and became a Buffalo soldier. Matter of fact, my great-grandfather was the bandmaster for the original Buffalo soldiers. And my oldest brother was the last of the Buffalo soldiers because they disbanded that. They used to go on parade and things like that from West Point, and they disbanded that and put those men into Patton's Army. I found out if I could go into the service at age 17, but the one that I could go into was the United States Navy. So I went down and joined the Navy and brought the papers back to get my mother to sign it, and she wouldn't sign it. And I said, well, if you don't sign it, I'll sign it for you. So she said, you really want to go? I said, yeah, nothing's going to happen to me. I'll be all right. So she signed it, and I went into the Navy. I did not know what I was in for. Most of my friends were Italian people, Jewish people, and Polish people. And we went to school together in Camden. And a lot of these guys, they joined the Navy too. So we got on the train and we're going to Great Lakes. And what they did, the train went south, and as it got into Washington, D.C., they put it on the side, the train, and a conductor came through, and persons of color, you got to move to another car. So I said, I'm not moving any place. I'm staying right here. You can't make me move. So my Italian friends and everybody crowded around me, and they said, no, if he moves, we move. So they said, well, we'll get the police in here and lock all of you up. I said, well, we don't care. We're going to war anyway. And I said, yeah, I might as well die here than die overseas. I said, matter of fact, what's going on? And then they came in and said, well, you're down south now, and you crossed the Mason-Dixon line, and we don't mix. At that time, they called us colored. Yeah. They don't mix colored and white together anywhere in the south. And that was brand new to me. And it was also new to my friends. Well, we grew up together, went to school together and things like that, played ball. And they weren't going to take any stuff about all that segregation and Jim Crowism that they had in the South. So we stayed in that car. They just locked the doors on us. Wouldn't let anybody in there. So the car went through D.C., went through Virginia, and got over into, I think it was Ohio. And that's when they didn't say anything. They came through and said, oh, you guys can go wherever you want. They unlocked the doors.
It sounds like, at least for a while, that was a pretty rude awakening for you. And I guess the question is, was that a sign of similar things to come for you?
Yes, it was. Pure hell. I'll put it that way. I mean, I had to endure a lot at that time.
Especially once he was sent to the swamp that was Muntford Point, a segregated facility at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, where the first 20,000 African-American members of the Marine Corps received their training.
What had happened was a Marine from New York had gotten off the bus and went into the station there and asked, they had brought in vending machines for cigarettes, and he walked into the white side, not paying attention. They had signs up, colored white then. He went in the white side and threw a dollar bill at the lady and asked, say, sweetheart, can we change for a dollar? And she threw four quarters at him, and then she looked at him and then screamed. And then the police came and arrested him and took the guy and put him in jail. Now, word got back to Muntford Point, that there was a Marine in jail down there. So it got over to Bobby Troop, Sergeant Fisher, who was white, another sergeant. They didn't go for that discrimination because they weren't from the South. And they said, we're going to go get that Marine. 1,000 black Marines got in trucks with 50 caliber machine guns on it. And we went into town, in that little old town. The railroad track went right down the middle, this side, and that black people this side, white people this side. City Hall was on this side. And the police station was on that side. And we went down there. And when we got down there, they were beating this Marine up. We arrested the whole police force.
Wow.
It was about eight policemen in there, the chief of police and everybody else, and took them back to Mumford Point and put them in the brig. Then all hell broke out from that. The commandant of the Marine Corps, he came over. What are you men going into town arresting police officers for? So we told him what he did. He said, we're not going to leave a Marine behind. What are you talking about? You're the commandant of the whole Marine Corps. Would you leave him behind? We had Tom McFadder at the time, Sergeant Thomas McFadder. He was the one who said, can't leave him there. Tom wrote a book called Caught in the Middle. And he became a Navy chaplain later on. But anyway, we took the Marine back, locked those officers up. The colonel just left us alone. They said, you guys go ahead and do what you're going to do. Just left us alone. And we kept those policemen in there for 5 days in the brig and on bread and water and turned them loose. And we told them, don't you ever mess with a Marine again. That's what McFadder told them. Don't mess with any of these Mumford Point Marines. Because people were spitting on them and just harassing them and treating them mean. Boy, where'd you get that uniform? You don't belong in it, and spit on them. They cut all that stuff, was cut out. But that was, to me, it was outrageous behavior. And I had never seen this. Here, I'm going to go fight Germans and Japanese, and here they're treating us worse than them because they had some German prisoners of war there. They treated them better than us. So that kind of got us. Later on at Mumford Point, another thing happened that's not written about, and that was the Royal Dutch Marines came to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, 5,000 of them. And these Marines had come from, I think they were over in North Africa someplace. When Hitler invaded their land, they went over there. Then they went to the Caribbean, and then they went through training. And they were there at Camp Lejeune to learn amphibious training, because they're going to reinvade where Hitler was and where the Japanese was in the Pacific. And what they said was the commandant, the Marine Corps, came and told the commandant of those Royal Dutch Marines, because they had 500 black Royal Dutch Marines. And he did not want those black Marines in Camp Lejeune. Told that commander, send those Marines over to Mumford Point. We segregate them here. That did not fly. That commander says, you don't leave a Marine behind. We're not going to leave any of ours. Those are our Marines. Where they go, we go. Now, if they're going to Mumford Point, we went. So 5,000 Royal Dutch Marines went over to Mumford Point, and we had a ball with those guys. I mean, especially, you know, after it had gone down to the beer hall and all of that, with the music and things, we had a ball with those guys. They stayed there for 3 or 4 weeks, and then they left. But that was an experience to see. And what it did to me, I said, my God, I'd write letters home to my mother and tell her about it. And she'd say, Robert, I'm going to tell you something. If people are going to be prejudiced against you, make them pay for it. Don't you ever forget them. Make them spend some money. That's the only thing they know is money. So that stuck with me throughout my lifetime. In marching, if you ever watch the Marines march, you'll see a swagger that they got from the Munford Point Marines, from Big Elmo. They put these men in ammo companies and supply companies, non-in-combat battalions. We all had weapons. If we had to use them, we used them. But we had all the food, all the medical supplies. We had all the ammunition. We had everything the Marines would want. And we brought those to those islands.
And you ended up on Guam, is that right?
I ended up there at Kent Wise at the medical dispensary on Guam. We had a small hospital there. Then over, we called it Barracuda Village, near the airfield up there in the Gana. Later on, we had two black doctors. One was a Lieutenant J.G., another one was a full lieutenant. Alvin Lawrence was lieutenant. He was from Chicago. C.J. Jones from New York, from Brooklyn, he was Lieutenant J.G. They had some stories. I wish they were alive because they told me what they were up against as officers. A lot of the white sailors and Marines wouldn't salute them. And Dr. Jones went and put his hat on a post and told this Marine, if you can't salute me, you salute that hat. But he went through a lot. But if somebody, and he was a surgeon, and he treated a lot of those guys. And one of the things that they did, they carried segregation too far. They segregated blood. 1X for white, 2X for black, 3X for Mexican, 4X for Native American on the bottles. Wow. When blood is only A, A, B, and O, you know. And one time in surgery, I went and got, they were operating on this white guy. They needed blood, and they told me to go down and bring back some A blood. I brought back a bottle of A blood. I didn't know nothing about these X's, and it had two X's on it. I handed it to the nurse. She dropped it on the floor, broke it. And the doctor there operated, what did you drop that for? And she said, we can't give him, use the N-word, blood. Wow. And that doctor said, listen, blood is blood. I wanted A blood. Give it to him. I don't care what the X's are. It doesn't mean a damn thing.
Right.
So in the meantime, you had a hematologist named Dr. Charles Drew, who invented blood plasma. The United States wouldn't use its plasma, so he took it to England. And when Hitler was bombing England, 1945, tearing it up, there was a shortage of blood. The Americans wanted to know, you have a shortage of blood over here? He said, no, we use Dr. Drew's blood plasma. And they said, oh, we can't use that. It's crystal. We can't segregate it. And they laughed at the American doctors for that. See? And then they started using it. And right then and there, they start using this plasma. And they took the X's off those bottles. And then Roosevelt died after that. When Roosevelt died and Harry Truman got in there, all sorts of things were happening in the armed forces, black troops, the army. You had Camp Van Dorn. You had Fort Bliss, riots. You had Port Chicago. And there was one up, Shoemaker, there was one up there. Tuskegee Airmen, there's one in Louisiana. All these broke out. And it started affecting the war effort. And Harry Truman says, we're not going to have none of that. We're going to integrate the whole thing. And I don't care if those Southern colonels and generals object to it. They could get the hell out. That's what they could do. So the whole thing got integrated in 1948.
Right.
And all that stuff stopped. My learning from being in the Marine Corps, that was my career. I used to be the suture man. I could sew a guy up. I mean, really sew him up. And some of these Munford Pointers, even today, when they see me, they call me the devil doc. They said, see that hand? You sewed it up. And it was perfect. Dr. Jones used to say, who did this? I said, I did. He says, you need to be a surgeon. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep people from getting sick. They're not going to have any wars when I come out of here. So I was very grateful to have that kind of experience. I mean, racism, Jim Crowism, I broke down a lot of those barriers. And I've got 1,000 stories I could tell in regards to mistreatment, but I had some good treatment.
Especially in 2012, when Robert Hammond and other corpsmen joined those Mumford Point Marines they tended to in Washington, D.C. to receive the Congressional Gold Medal. Inscribed on each one of those medals are the words, "For outstanding perseverance and courage that inspired social change in the Marine Corps."
Well, I felt very proud of that because it made me feel that I'm 100% American in that. And I remember when we went to the memorializing of the Battle of Iwo Jima at Arlington Cemetery, President Clinton was there, and we were there, and he said, "Those men over there are members of the Double V." And we all laughed and did that to him. He knew what it was. He said they had two wars to fight, one at abroad and one at home, and they won both of them. Then that made me feel proud, and to get that Congressional Gold Medal made me even feel prouder because it brought back some pleasant memories, like at the Brooklyn Naval Hospital. When I was there, we were all lined up outside for the president. Harry Truman came to visit the hospital, and we were at Captain's Muster there, and he came down, came right over to me. He said, "Boy," he said, "son, you're looking good," and he straightened my tie. He shook hands with me, and he kept on going with his big hat. President of the United States. So all of these things turned to, you know, being a citizen of being born in this country. And I said, now, sometimes I say, now, who do I really belong to? You know, I'm not going to say I belong to this group. I belong to that group. I belong to all of them. So that makes me 100% American with no hyphens. I belong to Omega Psi Phi Fraternity, and we mentor those boys every year. Now, the age group is from 8 to 18. Talking to these boys in terms of their future, and I tell them all, the best way to get your education, get it like I did. I went into service. I came out with the GI Bill. And I tell them, why don't you follow the basic principles that are handed down to you? Study Martin Luther King. He's a good role model for you. I said, that man went to jail. He caught hell, but he stuck to his guns. He made them pay. He made them pay for the discrimination that they had. That's what wrecked the Montgomery boycott, made them pay, right? I said, and you guys won't have to go through all the mess I did. You won't have to because people did it for you, and you better live up to it. And I tell them, I said, make me proud of you. You don't have to be proud of me. You make me proud of you. And I tell them all, go into service.
That is Robert Hammond. You can link to his original full-length interview and those for the other World War II veterans you heard from today at hometownheroesradio.com. As for the dream of Martin Luther King Jr., how much of that dream is realized is really up to us, isn't it? And aren't we thankful for our men and women in uniform today who put their lives on the line for us every day to make sure we have that opportunity? Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.